coming Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 11 in the morning Central Time on November the 22nd through 11 in the morning Central on November 23rd. Issues Etc. 24. Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
87 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Well, the words of Abraham Lincoln in the Gettysburg Address, "The world will little note what is said here," proved to be absolutely wrong. The world has much noted what was said there. And in the course of that short, very brief speech given at Gettysburg, something was happening, not only in American politics. Something was certainly happening in American politics. Something was happening in American civil religion. You know, the thumbnail sketch of what American civil religion is. It's when the state appropriates the language, the gesture, the ideas of religion for its own purposes. There's more to it than that, but that's a good thumbnail sketch. What place does the Gettysburg Address have in American civil religion? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Of course, the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address is upon us. And joining us here in the first hour, Dr. Richard Gamble. You can join us as well for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. A little bit later in the hour, after our conversation with Dr. Richard Gamble, Dr. James Buscher joins us. We'll remember 2nd century Bishop Clement of Rome, who's remembered a little bit later this week on the church's calendar. And then our pastor's roundtable on this Wednesday afternoon, we're going to spend it with Pastor Kirk Clayton and Pastor Ryan Fairman. We'll be talking about the parable of the 10 virgins. You can also post a question or a comment for our pastor's roundtable at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. We'll give away the Lutheran Study Bible to the listener with the best question or comment, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Richard Gamble is director of the Honors Program and associate professor of history at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan. He's author of a recent article for the American Conservative titled "Gettysburg Gospel: How Lincoln Forged a Civil Religion of American Nationalism." Dr. Gamble, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
How would you describe the place of the Gettysburg Address in American civil religion? Not only its formation, but it's kind of the way it's currently comprised.
Right. And as you indicated a moment ago, it's so prominent over the last few days on this 150th anniversary. It's really striking to see the comments on television, radio, on the internet, this speech has become untouchable. It has become removed completely from its historical context and has been elevated into a secular sacred text, if I can put it that way. And yet, it's not all that secular. The religion in it, the appropriation of religion in it, is quite subtle, but really very powerful. And it's remarkable how much Lincoln compressed into just 270 words or so.
So you have a definition of American civil religion that kind of goes beyond the first part that I mentioned a few moments ago, is when the state appropriates the language, the gesture, the ideas of religion for its own purposes. There's another part to it that you want to point out that's very important. What is that?
There are, and I think these two work together pretty closely, but for purposes of analysis, I think we can legitimately separate these out. So on the one hand, as you mentioned, we have the state, not just America, but almost any modern nation state taking the language of Christianity, the language of the Bible, redemptive language, and applying it to itself. But then we also have historical figures, great heroes in a nation's past, documents from a nation's past, perhaps battles, battle sites, that become elevated into a national pantheon, into what we can call a national scripture or a national saints and martyrs, and it takes on the intensity of devotion that we normally associate with religion. So on the one hand, we have true religion being co-opted by the state, and on the other hand, we have secular matters being exalted, elevated, and really into objects of worship.
Well, and to that second point there, to kind of a definition of what it means to be an American, to a definition of what it means to be a patriot, to question these doctrines of American civil religion is to run afoul of American orthodoxy. Would you go so far as to say that?
I would, and that's the most troubling aspect of it to me, and as I've reflected on it over the last 20 years or so, it has become so difficult for ordinary Americans to sort out the difference between being a patriot and engaging in this sort of national idolatry, whether that's bringing the American flag, and I know this is a very sensitive issue, but bringing the American flag into our churches. We have examples of the Pledge of Allegiance actually being part of a Sunday morning liturgy in a church in Georgia. When we can't tell the difference anymore between our love for our nation, our love for our place, and our love for God, then something has gone seriously wrong. And it's my own concern that Christians learn how to sort out the difference between these two realms that have their place but ought never to be confused with each other.
You say that Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, either intentionally or unintentionally, we'll get to that question a little bit later, kind of abstracts many things. It deals with abstractions, not with particulars, not with concrete examples, certainly not the examples that were laid before the American people at this time. Explain what you mean by that.
You know, this struck me more than ever before as I was preparing the article you mentioned. I've taught this speech for countless years with my own students, working through it line by line. But I never noticed before just how little it says that is concretely attached to the moment of 1863, of the experience of the Battle of Gettysburg. Now, on the one hand, we could see this as artistic. We could see this as poetic, lifting it out of its moment in time and place, its circumstance. And that could be merely artful, and that could be a key to its enduring power. But on the other hand, it seems more likely to me that Lincoln has turned the particularities of history, the messy particularities of history, into these floating abstractions, and thereby can get Americans of his own generation and all the way down to our present time, can get us to give our allegiance to these highly abstracted ideas that are not connected any longer to as I said, the particularities either of the American founding, of the Declaration, of the Constitution, of the nature of the American Union, the very thing that was being fought out on the battlefields of the 1860s. And when that happens, when we turn history and human experience into something so abstract, it's then very easy for us to lose contact with that history, lose our sense of proportion, lose our sense of what is possible here on Earth, what is possible through the agency of government, what is possible through the agency of war. And we come to believe that these highly abstract goals of for the nation state are actually possible here on Earth. It just all becomes very, very fuzzy. And as you mentioned, if you know, listeners take the time to go back and read through that speech, they will see that there is no mention of the United States, no mention of a North, of a South, no mention of the actual battlefield of Gettysburg, no soldiers' names, generals' names. It's a speech that has been removed entirely from place and from history and from its own time.
Dr. Richard Gamble is our guest. We're talking about the Gettysburg Address and its place in American civil religion on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Gamble is director of the Honors Program and associate professor of history at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, and author of a recent article in the American Conservative titled Gettysburg Gospel, How Lincoln Forged a Civil Religion of American Nationalism. You'll find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Your questions and your comments are welcome on this Wednesday afternoon, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. When we come back, this is not the first time that President Lincoln had co-opted biblical language, biblical phraseology. We'll see how we find it previously in his speeches and ideas and in the Gettysburg Address.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, WittenbergAcademy.org, to find out more.
Coming Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. from 11 in the morning Central Time on November the 22nd through 11 in the morning Central on November 23rd. Issues Etc. 24, Friday, November 22nd, and Saturday, November 23rd. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. That from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
An excerpt from the movie Saving Lincoln, President Abraham Lincoln reading the Gettysburg Address 150 years ago on November 19th, 1863. Dr. Richard Gamble is our guest. We're talking about the place of Gettysburg Address in American civil religion. Dr. Gamble, I wonder about this idea or this abstraction of ideas where we become a nation of ideas rather than of laws. That you were describing before the break, has the complete abstraction of the idea of freedom or liberty that we find in American civil religion, can it be said to be responsible to some degree why we extend that liberty beyond its natural bounds? Liberty to abort children, liberty to redefine marriage, and the list could go on?
Yeah, I think there is some basis for that, and I'd want to be very careful that no one hears me saying that Abraham Lincoln is somehow directly responsible for these things he could not even imagine. But there's another tradition in America, a venerable tradition in America, that pays much more attention to what we once called our chartered liberties. If we think back to the colonial period, the insistence on ancient rights and liberties or the rights of Englishmen, now that language was changed in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence. And for very good historical reasons, we had to appeal to something other than our rights as Englishmen if we were going to break free from the British Empire. But as that notion of liberty became more and more abstracted, more and more disconnected from an actual past, an inherited past, then it is certainly easy to read more and more things into the notion of freedom. Liberty, rights is especially a problematic category. And as we disconnect these things from history, disconnect them from documents such as the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and if we just turn it into these capital letter abstractions, then certainly it becomes much, much easier to read our own preferences into these things and claim we have everything from an airline passenger's Bill of Rights to the more morally offensive problems we see currently.
So is this the first time that Abraham Lincoln himself has waxed poetic in scripturesque terms?
Not at all. And this was common for his whole generation. And we're identifying and singling out Lincoln for good reason here today because of the place that the Gettysburg Address holds in our civil religion. But his entire generation, and indeed throughout 400 years of American history, this is a pretty deep-rooted habit of speaking about America in biblical terms. But Lincoln, as a young man, already back in the 1830s, he gave his Lyceum speech, in hindsight, a very important speech. And he spoke there of needing a political religion of devotion to the American founders. He used the quotation from Jesus, the promise of Jesus that the gates of hell would not prevail against his church. Lincoln used that very language to say that the gates of hell would not prevail against American liberty. And we find this over and over. And later in his career, right before the Civil War, perhaps the most famous example is when Lincoln said that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And I often ask my students if they see a book with the title, A House Divided, and there is a book with that title, they're not likely to think that that's an exegesis of the Gospel of Matthew, they're likely to think that that book is about the Civil War. And that shows the power of Lincoln and other statesmen taking biblical language and transferring it over to the nation state. The risk we face as Christians is that this language's identification with the nation state can become stronger than its identification with the church and with Jesus Christ. And Christians can then lose control of the very language that identifies who they are as the people of God.
Give us some examples from Lincoln's Gettysburg Address where he does that other thing of civil religion, and that is to elevate the secular ideas, the political ideas, to the realm of the sacred.
Sure. He does this with the sacrifice of the soldiers themselves. If you look at how often he uses the word consecrate, hallowed, he gives it this sacred aura. Now, it's very common for any people to speak of its battlegrounds as sacred in some sense. But the pattern is so persistent, it's so frequent in this short speech that Lincoln seems to be doing something much more. And he's taking phrases, and this is an example of how the two kinds of civil religion are happening simultaneously in this speech, almost sentence by sentence. He uses language such as shall not perish at the end, right? Language that comes right from John 3:16. He uses the language of brought forth. He uses the language of fourscore, which sounds like the psalmist talking about the lifespan of man as 70 and 10. It's all blended together, woven together, with also at the same time taking a quotation from the Declaration of Independence at the beginning of the speech, dedicated to a proposition that all men are created equal, taking the sacrifice of the soldiers at Gettysburg and blending it together in such a way that the national experience is on a par with the biblical experience, on a par even with Christ's own atoning sacrifice. It becomes one indistinguishable mass in this speech.
Do you think that this is Lincoln's intention, or Is it kind of a complex issue where he has these ideas, obviously, from some of his favorite writers, and is trying to be short, sweet, and poetic?
Right. You know, intention is the most difficult thing that the historian can try to probe. And often the historian simply has to stop short and say, well, this is what people said. These were the consequences. This is what their purposes seem to be at the moment, and we have to stop short of intentions. But Lincoln was a very, very smart politician. Lincoln was very skilled in a plain style speaking, form of speech that connected directly with the American people. He was also a man who knew both the rhythm and the content of the King James Version of the Bible, as his entire culture did. And for him to pick up these words, I think it's reasonable to say that some of what he's doing is unconscious. It just permeates the culture of his day. But the pattern is so clear and so repeated in that short space that it does seem to be intentional, and primarily as a statesman, he's trying to give a compelling explanation for why these soldiers and eventually hundreds of thousands are dying.
Finally, with only about a minute here, Dr. Gamble, what warning as an historian, as a student of this speech that has its place in the scripture, so to speak, of American civil religion? I think that's undeniable. What warning would you give our listeners about American civil religion as it is currently comprised in America today?
I would urge Christians to be shrewd, not to be duped easily by politicians who bring out the Bible, quote the Bible, for their own purposes. Christians ought to be more jealous, to guard the precious heritage that is theirs, guard the identity of the church, guard the identity of Jesus Christ and his work, and not allow the nation state to take any part of that identity, any part of that precious heritage away from us. We can love both our country and our God, and we can do that without confusing one with the other.
Dr. Richard Gamble is director of the Honors Program and associate professor of history at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan. He's author of a recent article for the American Conservative titled Gettysburg Gospel, How Lincoln Forged a Civil Religion of American Nationalism. Dr. Gamble, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
By the way, you'll find a link to that American Conservative article, Gettysburg Gospel, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. I highly recommend you read it. When we come back, we're going to talk about 2nd century Bishop Clement of Rome, who's remembered a little bit later in the church's calendar this week. Dr. James Buscher will be our guest. Folks, there are 6 weeks left in 2013, and we're $90,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues, etc., and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2013.
Arch Fitness of Greater St. Louis has a new fall schedule for adult boot camps and sports performance training classes. There's plenty of flexibility with workouts on weekday mornings, weekday evenings, or even Saturday mornings. Arch Fitness has a new, bigger location at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.HolyCrossLutheranAlbany.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of Issues, etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans. Issues, etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.